DC Public Library Podcast is made possible in part by the Institute of Museum and Library Services and is a production of the labs at DC Public Library.
You are listening to the DCPL Podcast. We are recording today from our new home at the recently modernized Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library, located in downtown Washington, D.C. This episode is a part of the All Things Local series, where we highlight the local history, culture, communities, and personages who have made an impact on Washington, D.C. My name is Olubunmi Bakari, and I am one of the library associates here at the Labs. Today I'm joined by Antoinette White Richardson. Tony, as she is affectionately known, is an education specialist in the Adult Literacy Resource Center here at Martin Luther King Jr. Library. She is also a seventh generation Washingtonian. Outside of her work here in the library, she has served in several leadership positions, such as president of the Delta Housing Corporation of the District of Columbia, president of the Washington, D.C. Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta, and president of AFSCME District Council 20, and AFSCME Local 1808. Tony, thank you for joining me today. Before we discuss all of the amazing work that you have done and continue to do, let's talk a little bit about your background. As I mentioned in the intro, you are a seventh generation Washingtonian. Share with our listeners a bit about your family and growing up here in the district.
Well, I have always lived in the district, and I still live in the district. It is on my father's side that I go furthest back with the seventh generation. And I always tell people, it is six generations with good paperwork.
Okay.
And then it's seventh with a little muddy paperwork. Okay. And you go figure that out.
Okay.
I was born at Georgetown Hospital in 1958. I don't mind telling it because I think that age is something to be celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
Each day, each year is something to say, hey, I'm here and I'm in good health. So I was born at Georgetown Hospital. I was raised in Northwest D.C. in Ward 4. I came home to a little street I call Quintana Places, which is very special to me. I came home to Quintana Place. My parents were living there a couple of years before I was born. I always tell people that I was a very fortunate child because I am one of five girls.
Mm-hmm.
And my sisters, when I was born, they were actually 24, 23, 21, and 9 years of age when I came into this world. So I had a whole lot of people to hold me, hug me, and I always tell people that I'm not sure my feet ever touched the ground. grew up in that area. I went to Nativity Catholic School.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I'm Catholic, and I tell people I'm Catholic by way of the slave master.
Mm.
I'm also went from Nativity. I went to Ursuline Academy in Bethesda, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And from Ursuline Academy, I went to George Washington University for undergrad on a scholarship. And then I went from George Washington University, I went to the University of District of Columbia to get my master's in adult education, which is what I do now.
Mm.
I'm an education specialist in the, used to be the Adult Literacy Resource Center, recently changed to the Adult Learning Department.
Okay.
But we focus on adults and literacy and trying to focus on them getting their GED or helping them with any kind of reading issues, developmental issues in reference to adults and where they kind of fell off the track in learning, where they kind of stopped. My growing up in D.C., I could tell everybody, for me, it was fabulous. And I say that because my father and mother both enjoyed exploring the city. So I remember going to the parade down on Constitution Avenue, the parade down on Pennsylvania Avenue. One thing that sticks in my mind, I was a very little girl, but when President Kennedy was assassinated, they took him from the Capitol. And they took him along Pennsylvania Avenue, the cortege, And I remember being on my dad lifting me on his shoulder so I could see mm-hmm. as it went down the avenue. And those kind of things stick with me. Mm. I remember taking my own godchildren to the 4th of July parade because I wanted them to see the parade. I wanted them to have the same feeling that I was privy to growing up. Mm-hmm. You know, and people don't realize that was free entertainment. And it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. I went to the Cherry Blossom Parade. I mean, the Cherry Blossom Parade has grown so now. When I was a little girl, you came out, you saw it, but it just moved on and on. But museums, always went to museums. If it wasn't museums, I even participated in D.C. had different programs, like the D.C. Youth Orchestra. Mm-hmm. It was around when I was a little girl, and I participated in D.C. Youth Orchestra. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because my nieces end up, themselves being in the program.
What instrument did you play?
I played drums.
Oh, okay.
But then it was called percussion because, see, it wasn't a set because it was the D.C. Youth Orchestra. So you learn to play everything that's percussion related. Snare separately, the bass separately, the cowbell, which is considered percussion, the triangle, which is considered percussion, timpanis, you know, all those, you play them separately, as opposed to, you know, how you see in bands, you see the drummer and they have a set. Mm-hmm. That was not the norm. Okay. You learn to play the xylophone, all of those percussionary instruments.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I didn't pursue it much further. I went on to do some other things, such as when I was in high school at Ursuline, I got into forensic. Now we think of forensic as forensic science and you looking at how somebody died or why they died. No, when I came along, it was the debate and speech team. Forensic is also known as debate and speech. And I was a part of the debate and speech team from 14 years old till I graduated out of high school. And even dabbled in a little bit at GW. Loved it. Loved it. I can think of so many times I tell people we used to walk to everything or take the bus and the cab. I told people my parents never drove. They never had a license, which means we never owned a car. If you don't have a license, you have no need for a car. But we had great stock in the cab. And till this day, I remember the cab number because my job was when my mother said, "We're ready." I would call LI41212, and anybody who's hearing this would know that was the phone number for Lincoln Cab. LI41212, so you know it made a hell of an impression on me. And that's how we would get around when we were going to special occasions. And, of course, you went to the bus stop. I tell people I can even remember when they opened up the red line, hint, hint, and just when everything developed. But always did stuff in Washington. And always had a pride about doing things in D.C.
So before we go further, I know before we've mentioned, just in a personal conversation, that you have this deep fondness for Washington history, local history, and you have a connection to Paul Lawrence Dunbar High School here in the district. Share with our listeners a little bit about the history of that school and your family's ties to it.
Okay. Well, my mother went to Paul Lawrence Dunbar High School. Now, my mother was born in 1916. I always get a little mixed up there. But she went to Dunbar High School. And my aunt, her sister, who was right next in line, went to Dunbar High School. And then my oldest two sisters went to Dunbar High School. So it's always been like, it looked like a generational thing of going to Dunbar High School. And that was my connection. I knew all, my mother would talk about who went to Dunbar and her various friends, and we would be in the street. And I said, "Well, how you know them?" "Oh, we went to high school together." You know, and my sisters being around them, people would say they went to high school with them. And then when, of course, when I got into Delta Sigma Theta and I'm in the Washington, D.C. alumni chapter, I looked around, looked like a whole lot of those sisters of mine, my sorors, had gone to Dunbar High School, particularly of a certain age. And I'm talking about before integration. My mom and sisters went before 1954. And that made a difference. Now, I would get in trouble if I didn't say this. My aunt, my mommy's baby sister, she always said she wanted to be different. She was not going to follow them. She went to Cardozo. So this is a shout out to Cardozo.
That's where my granny went.
Is that where your granny? Oh, wow.
But her sister went to Dunbar.
Okay. So was it that interest in seeing that and listening to that? Because, of course, you know, it was the M Street School before it was Dunbar. And when you look and you know, like you said, I like the history part of D.C. When you look at most organizations that had, that made a difference during a certain area, a lot of the leadership went through Dunbar High School. A lot of leadership not only went to Dunbar, but they also went to Howard University. But then they also, most people don't realize, went to Miners Teachers College, which is now UDC. A lot of it. You know, and it all intertwines and ties together. You know, I am very fascinated with how this takes place, because one thing seems like as soon as I go down one road, it has me coming back across the same path or something maybe I studied a year ago or 5 years ago. It all intertwines. It's like it's a building block. And I have seen and recognized that Dunbar Senior High School is very relevant to the history of the District of Columbia, but to the history of Black folks. Most people don't even realize Dunbar was the first Black school, high school, for anybody in America. There were other schools, other places, but it was a high school. It was a school that went to the 12th grade that was a public school. And it, most people don't realize, and it was established by the Congress on the Hill. And when people would graduate from there, they had opportunities not only to go to the Black schools, but they had opportunities to go to some of the more prominent and more prestigious white schools. I tell this story, and I tell this because it fascinates me. Of course, I'm a Delta. And one of the things that fascinated me was that when the very first national president of Delta Sigma Theta graduated from Dunbar High School. And from there, she went to the University of Pennsylvania, which is an Ivy League school. So we're talking about an era in which this was a little bit more the norm than people realize. You know, now we celebrate, oh, they got into it. There was a group of Black folks who were breaking down doors and crossing boundaries and making a difference way back when. You know, so I was
so what was so special about Dunbar? Like,
I think it was talent. I think the teachers there were exceptionally talented. And because you're dealing in an era of segregation, racism, et cetera, they were so determined that when they got their students, they were going to produce these young people who were the best of the best.
Let's talk a bit about your work here at the library. Share with our listeners again more in depth of what your role is and some of the services that your department offers.
Okay. I've been here now 20 plus years. And one of the things that I'm very proud about is that my department, the Adult Learning Department, formerly the Adult Literacy Resource Center, we provide resources that are specifically designed for individuals who are low-level literacy readers. Example, somebody may not read above the sixth grade. They might read at the third grade or the fourth grade. But we have books at that level that an adult would find informative or find interesting. We research and put on the shelves books that help them to feel better about their reading, to help them increase their reading, to improve their level of reading. So we get those books that are special ordered from certain catalogs and companies, and we have that resource available, and we have a special book club for them called A Feel for Books. That we enjoy that because they feel that they can participate in this book club process that is taking place where they would not be able to normally go in and read our standard book club that's supported by the library, we get books specifically for them. Mm-hmm. One of the books we just finished reading was called Freedom Summer. Mm-hmm. And it was a book that they could relate to, but it was at a level that they could relate to mm-hmm. as well. We also help people get their GED. And what I mean by that is we have the GED ready test available here free. So people who need to see where they are can come in, talk to us. We'll say, oh, we'll do an assessment, and then we allow them to take the test if we really feel that they may have success. Mm-hmm. So we offer the GED ready test here at the Martin Luther King Library on the second floor free. Mm-hmm. We also offer English as a second language, mm-hmm. conversation circles. Mm-hmm. And we have the conversation circle because they're so important that anybody can just drop in. You don't have to have come to the class before and the class before and the class before. That conversation circle, which means that no matter when you come, you can have input, it is relative, and you could walk away feeling, okay, maybe I learned a little more English. Maybe I learned a little more of the American culture. We also offer, we have a class called Computer Comfort. Mm-hmm. That is for people who need a little more time understanding how to use the computer. Mm-hmm. It's a very low-level class, and we offer that, once again, free. It's a first-come, first-serve. You have to check our website to see when it's scheduled. Mm-hmm. But it's something that we offer and that we do as well. Something else that we offer that I'm very tickled with, we call a feel for movies. Mm-hmm. And that's where we take a book that's been turned into a movie. Mm-hmm. Because quite often, the books that are turned into movies, most of the time, are very thick and heavy. And the level is beyond the group that we service. However, when it's been made into a movie, you'd be surprised at how the patrons can better follow what's going on. And you point out little sections in the book where something may have taken place that relates mm-hmm. to what's going on in the movie. So they have a better understanding of what's in this book that everybody's talking about. And then the movie, then they feel much more connected. They feel they can have a conversation about it. So we do that. And we do that at two communities right now. We do outreach. Edgewood. Mm-hmm. And
Where is that located?
Edgewood is at Edgewood Community, Edgewood Street, Northeast Washington, D.C. And we also do it at what we call Fortitude to Delta Towers. Used to be Delta Towers, and that's on Florida Avenue. But it's strictly for those residents. Mm-hmm. You can't walk in. You have to be a resident. But we offer it for the senior citizens at these two facilities. Mm-hmm. So they really enjoy it. And we have major discussion around what the movie was about, how the book fits into the movie. Mm-hmm. The other things that we also offer in our division, we offer special programs. Sometimes we bring in, people think that a storyteller is just for children, but that's not true. Over the years, we have brought in storytellers just for the adults. Mm-hmm. So they can enjoy this dramatic interpretation of a book that maybe they never thought, they gave a lot of thought to. Mm-hmm. And we, once again, we discuss it at a more mature level. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are some of the things that we do in my division. We also, believe it or not, we have programs for finishing your GED in that we provide the resource for you to come in, check out a book. We offer some tutoring depending on where your level is. You have to be of a pretty close to getting it, but we can offer some one-on-one tutoring. And then we also have tutoring space for people in the various programs. Mm-hmm. Cubicles where you come with your tutorer and you're able to come in and schedule it. And you have to be with a program. Some of the programs may be like a Roosevelt Stay, mm-hmm. you know, and somebody might have a tutorer that they work with. Or LVA, Literacy Volunteer Advocates. Mm-hmm. Or you may have another program such as Carlos Rosario, mm-hmm. you know, those are some of the programs where a person may have a tutor and they need to meet outside of the school environment And we're open because we're open on Saturday. Mm-hmm. You know, and right now we're open on Thursday evening and probably more evenings to come. So it fits better with a tutor schedule. Okay. So those are some of the things that we offer.
So So I can hear in your voice the passion for the work that you do. Mm-hmm. So what made you choose to go into this field and stay in it for that matter?
Because there's an understanding that I realized it was a good fit for me, was that everybody doesn't get everything the first 12 years. We say people go to school, and just because they're there doesn't mean that they're able to grasp it. Some need a little more time. Some need it presented in a different way. And when I have patrons come, whether individuals or groups, and they get it, I can see it in their eyes that they get it, you know, I feel good. Because that means they left with a little better understanding. And I'm always putting a little bit of D.C. history. I can't help it. Mm-hmm. So then they walk away with a knowledge of a story. And then usually how it ties to Washington, D.C. Because this is where they live. And I realize things, we all learn things better when we can relate to it. Mm-hmm. My passion is just wanting people to get it. And I like working with adults. Mm-hmm. Teenagers and adults are my forte. Mm-hmm. You know, because we can have this real dialogue and discussion. Mm-hmm. And I like what they teach me. Mm-hmm. You know, they bring in their experiences. Mm-hmm. And I listen. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the being able to have the feedback. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of grabbed me. Mm-hmm. You know? And I've been here ever since. And don't plan on going anywhere anytime soon.
Well, thank you, because they certainly need you and need your energy in that space. And let's talk about something else. African American cemeteries. Now, I didn't mention this in the beginning, but you were vice president of the Woodlawn Cemetery Perpetual Care Association.
Yes.
Share with our listeners where the Woodlawn Cemetery is located, what your organization is about, and why there was a need for this organization in the first place.
Okay. You're absolutely correct. Currently, I am the vice president of the Woodlawn Cemetery Perpetual Care Association. The president is Mr. Leander Moore. The Woodlawn Cemetery in and of itself is a historical site. It's located at 4611 Benning Road. And the society, the Woodlawn Cemetery Perpetual Care Association, let me say association, we try to maintain it because cemeteries are privately owned unless they're military cemeteries. And I say that again, unless they are military cemeteries, cemeteries are privately owned. And there are many, you can get on the internet and see many stories about how cemeteries have disappeared throughout, particularly in the Black communities. Mm-hmm. But the problem is there's so much history there. Mm-hmm. And at our cemetery, and I'm going to talk about mine specifically, we have a lot of history there. Example, one of the first Black senators during the period of Reconstruction, is buried there. His name is Blanche K. Bruce. Then the other congressman during that same period is John Mercer Langston. And John Mercer Langston, they call him the son of Virginia because he was born in Virginia. And he had an opportunity to do other things in his life. But here's a man who's responsible for being the president of Virginia State. He's a gentleman who served as the dean of the law school at Howard. Here's a gentleman who is the great uncle of Langston Hughes. That's where Langston Hughes gets his first name from. Mm-hmm. Langston, John Mercer Langston, Langston Hughes. There's so much history there. One of the first Black doctors in the area is also there. It is so much. Like Francis School is named after the gentleman who's buried in our cemetery. It is so much to see. But the sad part is, because it is not publicly funded, because it's not maintained by the government. It is privately maintained. We have to limit how often we're open. We're usually only open 4 times a year, and we welcome people. Mm-hmm. But it is, we're really on a, trying to work on a campaign to say, hey, National Park Service or something of that nature, can you come take it over or come help us with it? Because believe it or not, it is one of the few black cemeteries left in D.C. Mm-hmm. One thing about, like, people don't realize is that Harmony Cemetery in Maryland used to be in D.C.
Right. It's in the news as of late.
Well, it's in the news of late because that's a whole other issue.
Right.
The one, the Harmony out in Maryland, some of the bodies got moved there, but it used to be called Columbia Harmony.
Columbia Harmony.
When they went to move bodies and they didn't get an okay from everybody, the developer sold the stones and ended up being the showing up some land out of Virginia, as we call a hot mess,
mm-hmm.
because of the disrespect
sometimes we have for the dead. Great-great-grandfather was buried there. But they moved his body, but of course his headstone is missing. So
okay,
I'm looking for that. Hopefully they'll be able to find it.
I mean, that is something, and that's why we don't want this to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this cemetery goes back to the late 1800s, and I just saw in Washingtonian magazine they're talking about a cemetery in Montgomery County,
mm-hmm.
that's going through some changes, and they're trying to preserve. What I like about Woodlawn, it is there.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of it is preserved, you know, and we're keeping the legacy alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell anybody, if you want any more information about it, you know, please reach out to me, you know, and I'll be glad to provide you any information that you need to know. And as you know, by me being on this podcast, I am at the library, at the Martin Luther King Library on the 2nd floor. So come see me.
Okay.
Call me. But yes, it is so much in there. And it's funny because we're going to do a project with Delta Sigma Theta, the Washington, D.C. alumni chapter. We finally found our last founder, and she's buried there.
Mm.
So we're going to place a headstone. That's the last one of our 22 founders. We finally found her.
Okay,
so we're going to place something there.
So I'm glad you brought that up. And, mm-hmm. and so I know that Delta Sigma Theta is very close to your heart.
Mm-hmm.
So let's again shift gears and talk about your work with Delta Sigma Theta Sorority. Share with our listeners a bit about the history mm-hmm. of Delta Sigma Theta and the local chapter in particular.
Mm-hmm. Delta Sigma Theta Sorority was founded in 1913 by 22 women up at Howard University campus. One of the better books to read to get a real good understanding is called In Search of Sisterhood. I would recommend that to anybody to read because I think it gives a better historical layout. But it was founded in the 1913 at Howard. Now, my chapter that I belong to, the Washington, D.C. alumni chapter, was founded not too long after that in 1921. So here we are in 2021. And my own chapter is celebrating 100 years. And I'm like, woo-hoo! I find Delta Sigma Theta was a good fit for me. It's a sorority, but it's part of what we call the Divine Nine. And for those that don't know what the Divine Nine is, that is the fraternities and sororities that are historically black. Most people don't get into and understand even things such as a sorority back in the day was very segregated.
Mm-hmm.
So when black students were on white campuses, they developed sororities and fraternities. And then after a while, when it happened to be at Howard, it was like, wow, this is a good idea. They wanted to become part of it. So they developed a chapter at Howard. And it became a way to give back. It was a focus on making sure the community was rising up
mm-hmm.
in the middle and all that was taking place. We always used to say in the day, the sororities and fraternities were the best and the brightest.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because such people as the guy who wrote Lift Every Voice and Sing.
James Weldon Johnson.
He was a Sigma. Okay. Then the And they made A. Philip Randolph, an honorary Sigma, in Delta Sigma Theta, which I'm going to talk about now. I mean, we have had some of the best and the brightest, and I mean currently not the best and the brightest. The woman named Shirley Jackson, who is the president of Rensselaer Polytech, I'm so proud of her. Because she is a member of Delta Sigma Theta.
And she's a native Washingtonian.
And she's a native Washingtonian who went to, I got to give a shout out, Roosevelt Senior High School. She's absolutely brilliant.
Mm-hmm. I featured her here in an exhibition a few years ago.
Oh, awesome. Mm-hmm. Did you know she was a Delta then?
I did not.
Oh, she was a Delta, and she was made at MIT, Massachusetts Institute of technology. Mm-hmm. So I only say that to say the span, the people, you know.
One of my favorite people, Dorothy Hyde.
Absolutely. Dorothy Hyde is very interesting because Dorothy Hyde is very well known not only in Delta, but she's also very well known because of her National Council of Negro Women connection. She and Mary McLeod Bethune were very, very, very good friends. And Mary McLeod Bethune was really her mentor. And she also got involved in the civil rights. And when you look at some of the pictures, you'll see how she probably is the only woman in the middle of all those men. But that's, we call that being a Delta. You can handle any situation.
Yeah, she got the job done.
Yes, she did. And it's funny you should say that because in our library system on Benning Road, we have
the Dorothy
Irene Hyde Library.
I used to work there.
You know, so, you know, you have Dorothy Hyde. You have the young lady, and I try to bring people that are more current as well as historical. Keisha Knight Pulliam, who used to be the little girl on the Bill Cosby. She went to Spelman, and she pledged Delta Sigma Theta. You know, as you go through the, all the people that you run into, we have opera singers. We have one of the more famous opera singers. She went to Howard. And I can't, her name is eluding me right now. I see her picture just as clear. But so many.
You talking about Blackwell?
Blackwell went to Catholic.
She went to Catholic.
She went to Catholic. And we're going to give this some clarity. And I'm calling her sister's name, but I call her Sora Blackwell. And she was an opera singer, but she went to Catholic University. And she was made a Delta Catholic. But there's another one up at Howard, much older. But like I said, hopefully it'll come to me. But there are so many, and I just want to go back to Frankie Muse Freeman. A lot of people don't understand Frankie Muse Freeman was the first African-American woman and or man to serve on the Commission for Civil Rights in reference to when Kennedy and Johnson established a Civil Rights Commission to deal with law. She was awesome. She's also a Delta. There are so many, and I'm like I said, the list goes on and on. And within our own chapter, Mary Church Terrell. Mary Church Terrell, my own chapter, Washington, D.C. alumni, they made her one of the first honorary members of Delta Sigma Theta. And the other person is Nanny Helen Burroughs. That's another person that my chapter, Washington, D.C. alumni, brought into the organization. Constantly bringing people in, you know, that we felt that they hold up the mantle for being better, for knowing better, and for doing better. So the list goes on, and I am so proud because I entered Delta when I was 19 years old, and I already gave you some numbers earlier, so do the math. And I've been active ever since. I had the pleasure, as you mentioned before, about the housing, but before I did housing, I was also the president of the Washington, D.C. alumni chapter, which I've always felt very honored to have served. So
let's talk about that a bit, because within the African-American community, sororities and fraternities, they they provide a large amount of community service. And you mentioned the Delta Towers.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that project and its association with your sorority.
Okay. Before I do that, I want to say we a lot of the fraternity sororities, and I know my chapter particularly, we give out lots of scholarships. Every year, we award no less than 10 scholarships. Okay, and it's a combination of brand new, continuing, but it's no less than 10 scholarships to young people pursuing an education. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about the housing. Wow. If you go to the corner of Florida and Bladensburg Road, you'll see a new building called Fortitude at Delta Towers. But before we just finished building that. But before we built that, we had Delta Towers, which was a senior facility. And the new one is a senior facility. In 2017, we celebrated 40 years. So we're in 2021. So we're at 44 years of Delta Housing Corporation being in existence. It started out of my chapter as an idea. And then under the leadership of Sora Alice T. Davis, who is still living, we were able to establish this 501c3 foundation, secure the land, and build what was then Delta Towers for senior citizens and individuals with handicap. And what we are so proud of that here we are 44 years later, still standing.
Mm-hmm.
And we built a new building, and we're in the process of developing another building. And we're looking at doing a cultural center because it's important to make a presence where you live,
mm-hmm.
not somebody else's backyard. Dig in your own backyard and make a difference. Where you stand to be able to give back. And the thing I tell anybody, on those boards of the Delta Housing Corporation of the District of Columbia, every single board member is a volunteer. And I say that because you have a lot of boards where people get checks and get paid to be there. That's a board where everybody gives their time freely. No one gets paid. And they do a lot of hard work. Because developing buildings and building buildings and getting finance and partnerships and all those kinds of things, that's a regular job aside from the job we normally do. So I'm very proud of what we have done, that we built on a legacy, that we have not lost it. And as I said, we're in the process of now trying to build a cultural center so that, you know, we can look at ourselves within the community. And one more thing I want to add is I'm a theater buff, okay? And I sit on this board called the Central Theater, which is, once again, another community theater in Washington, something that focuses on D.C. And quite often I tell people, look, if you can't sit and read, go and look.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, theater is really even more intense than a movie because they have to keep it going and there's no rollback, there's no replay, there's no startup again. They give it to you just as is and in the presence and the faith. But I work with the Essential Theater, which I just wanted to put my little plug in for them because I think they're an awesome company. They're very small, but they work out of Washington and everything is focused on bringing theater at a community level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not at a Kennedy Center level, but at a community level where it's affordable and relevant to what's going on in that community. So that's one of my passions.
Mm-hmm.
And that also makes me think about how you do next. What do you do next?
Mm-hmm.
And it made me get involved in University of District of Columbia. I'm on the Board of Trustees there.
Mm-hmm.
And I am very, very excited about that, to make a difference at a university level in a decision-making position to say, look, we're here.
Mm-hmm.
The University of District of Columbia, and I'm plugging a little bit.
It's okay, I'm an history. Alumni.
All right. I think I knew that, but that's why I'm plugging. UDC has a wonderful historical history, starting out as minor normal school, going to minors teachers college, becoming DC teachers when they merge minors teachers in Wilson. One was white, one was black, become DC teachers, and then eventually evolving to UDC. People don't know what in this city, what that state institution stands for. People don't even realize the father of black basketball, Dr. E.B. Henderson, he went to minor normal first. Then he went to the other schools. So just a little bit of a tidbit. The woman who first got the first PhD in mathematics, charter school named after her, E.L. Haynes, she went to minor normal school. So a lot of people came out of there first. One of the founders of Delta, Vashti Turley Murphy, she went to minor normal, then transferred and went to Howard to get her bachelor. So that is the rock of a lot of what we say institutional history that a lot of people don't know about. But it's very relevant to DC as we see it, as it stands.
What don't you do? Okay, so we're running low on time. And so I have 5 questions to ask you. Mm-hmm. I call it Fast 5.
Okay.
You give me the first answer that pops into your head. Okay. What is your favorite book?
Soul Brothers and Sister Lou.
Soul Brothers and Sister Lou.
It was one of the first urban fictions ever written. Mm-hmm. And back then they didn't call it urban fiction.
Who's the author?
Can't even tell you, but God, it was a good book. I was like 13 years old and I couldn't put it down.
Okay.
Soul Brothers and Sister Lou.
Okay. What makes you laugh?
People. People tickle my soul. I can sit around and just sit out and look at people and get just as tickled. People. Just people watching tickles my soul.
Okay. What inspires you?
My parents. I think when I look back and I think about it, they're the ones as to why I am where I am. Mm. So every day I think about, okay, I'm here because of them. Mm-hmm. So that's what inspires me. And of course, all that comes with it. Mm-hmm. You know, I come from a female-dominated household, family. Like, we give birth to a lot of girls. Okay? So even that inspired me, that being that female strength, you know, people talk about girl power. Mm-hmm. I came out the womb in a family full of girl power. It wasn't even discussed. You just did it. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm inspired by what my parents did for me.
Mm-hmm. Which historical figure would you most like to have met?
Oh, Mary Church Terrell. Mm-hmm. Mary Church Terrell. He was a well-educated, well-coached, wealthy African-American in a period when we wasn't supposed to have anything. And she studied in France. I mean, just, oh my God, would have loved to have met her.
And the last question I have is, how would you like to be remembered?
Ooh, for honesty. You know, for being a person, like it or not, when she, you know, you could count on her being honest, whether it was dealing with your finances or dealing with keeping you on track, that she was very honest and sincere. Mm-hmm. Those are my 2 things, because I think with honesty and sincerity, you get respect. I just tell people, you ain't got to like me, but I'm going to have you respect.
Well, Ms. Toni, thank you for joining me today. I look forward to hearing more about your service in the community and any upcoming projects that you'll be working on, because I know that you'll be involved in something, mm-hmm. Starting something, building something, creating something. Mm-hmm. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
This has been an episode of All Things Local on the DC Public Library podcast. Please visit dclibrary.org to learn more about the library's services and programs. Talk to us online at DCPL on Twitter and at DC Public Library on Instagram. For more information on the Martin Luther King Jr. Library, you can visit dclibrary.org/MLK2020. Listen and download this show wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you for listening.